Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of the DC Caps Driven podcast. We are very excited today because we're going to talk about family business. And we have three great men joining us, Hank Josephs, Michael Josephs, and Dan Josephs with Spruce Industries, one of the fastest growing Jansan distributors, janitorial supply distributors in the country. They're based in New Jersey. And really excited today. Father, son. So it's awesome to have three of them on the same frame. Thank you so much, Hank, Michael, and Dan, for joining DC Cats Driven Podcast.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
So Hank, I'm going to start with you. Can you tell us about the Spruce Industries business? Who started it? When did you start?
Company was started about 75 years ago by a family in the Union County, New Jersey area. And I got involved with them about 10 years later, 20 years later, probably. And they were struggling with transition. They had children that were some weren't interested in the business. And I took a flyer and risked everything I had, both my boys' college education, left a pretty big time job, and borrowed enough money and bought the business. And basically thought, because I was a relatively big shot in a big company, that I knew everything about distribution and Jansan. And I basically found out in the first 6 months, I knew nothing. So it was a huge learning curve, very nervous part of my life where I had everything at risk. But we worked hard. My wife and I worked hard at it. We worked together, which I don't recommend to a lot of people. But we were able to gradually get out from under all the loans, and we successfully navigated the marketplace. And I've been doing it. Friday or Thursday will be our 40th year that I've owned the company.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So the company was started 75 years ago and you bought them 40 years ago. It was started 40 years ago. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
So Hank, I've read a little bit, or I've read extensively about the Spruce Industries business, and we also work with you. So it's exciting. Appreciate the opportunity. It's in your family DNA, right? So the Spruce is in your family DNA. And when both Dan and Michael were growing up, did you always want them to get into the family business, or how was that?
That's a great question. If you own a family business, you are involved in, it's 24/7. You never go, when you go on vacation, you're never on vacation. You're always attached. You're always worried. Every night, my wife and I would come home and the boys would be in school and have their afternoon activities. And we'd talk about things over the dinner table. We always had dinner together. And they would hear us, my wife and I, talking, sometimes arguing, sometimes fighting about different issues and different customers and different problems. So they grew up around the business, but it was never an attitude that we had, both my wife and I, that they were expected to come into the business. We basically worked our behinds off to make sure that we could provide them with a healthy living, a lifestyle, and college education. And then from that point on, whatever they decided to do, I wanted them to be able to do unfeathered, without debt, and move forward in their life. So, you know, during the summers and a little bit of high school and college, when they came home, they worked for us. Both of them worked for us. Well, it was in a warehouse, in the office. Mike would, you know, handled a lot of stuff with the operational stuff. Dan was involved in computers. He's an engineer by trade. Helped his mom. So it was truly, they weren't flipping hamburgers anywhere. They were in the family business. And then they went off to college. They had their internships, various internships, and then they went off onto Wall Street. And that was fine for us. We were very happy. The business had grown, was growing. We were pleased. And then gradually, I mean, there was this, well, Dan could explain more about how he decided to change his career, and Mike also. So, but we always discussed the business. It was never, they knew everything and we didn't hide anything. And we were upset. They knew we were upset. And we were able to provide and continue. And it was very positive.
No, I think that's great, right? So thank you so much, Hank, for sharing that side of the story. Let me ask you, Daniel, you know, you worked at JP Morgan for over 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then did you always want to come back to the business? Like, your dad was not really, it's not like as if, hey, you know, you need to get into the family business. So what made you choose to work for Spruce?
There was never even a thought in my mind after graduating college that I was going to be doing this. It never crossed my mind. I graduated college and I got a job working for JP Morgan on the software engineering side. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed what we were doing. The company was actually for a bank was pretty small at that time. We were about 10,000 employees. It felt like a family. It was a really great atmosphere. And then about 2.5 years into working there, we ended up merging with Chase. Obviously, Chase acquired JP Morgan. It was a huge acquisition. Our 10,000 employees became 200 and something overnight. The culture changed a lot. It became much more the culture of Chase. And started getting feelings that it wasn't going to be the same. And then about another 6 months after that, maybe it was a year after that, we merged with Capital Bank One out of the Midwest. And we became close to 500,000 employees. I felt like it was a small country. It was hard to navigate. You couldn't get promotions. There was a long line of people ahead of you trying to do the same thing. And I started looking around at other opportunities. Maybe it was other banks. And I remember telling my father about what was going on, and just I was unhappy with what was going on. So he says, "Well, why don't you come work for me?" And I thought he was half kidding it the first time he said it. I sort of dismissed it and kept going with what I was doing. And then he said it again, very casually. And I said, "I don't know what I'd be doing there. I don't know how to sell. I don't know what is going on." He says, "Well, why don't you try taking vacation? Take a week's vacation. Come in and I'll drive you around. I'll show you what's going on. I'll teach you what we're doing now and you see how you like it. After the week, we can sit down and discuss, and if you don't like it, then you keep interviewing with what you're doing." So after the first week, I remember I ended up calling my boss back at JP Morgan. I said, "Something's going on at home. I need another week." So I did 2 weeks. I felt like the first week wasn't enough to really feel what was going on. And at the end of the second week, I was sat in Hank's office and we were sitting there having a conversation. And he just casually said, "So what would you do differently?" And I looked at him with 12 eyeballs and said, I've got ideas, but what if I'm wrong? What if I've been looking at this for 2 weeks?" He says, "What if I'm wrong?" He says, "Well, then I'll try something different." And that idea of you try something, if it doesn't work, you pivot. You try something, if it doesn't work, you pivot, was really engaging for me. It wasn't something that I ever experienced working for the bank. You know, you used to have meetings, there wasn't that ability to pivot quickly and do something different at something if you saw something or you had to change. And after that meeting, I remember we sat down and we're like, "All right, we're going to do this, but we're going to do it right." So I ended up going back to work for JP Morgan for another 6 months. He put me in touch with other family businesses in our industry, ones that were successful in the family business, ones that were not so successful. And I talked to maybe 6 or 7 different people, heard a lot of different stories, took a lot of different notes. He spoke to a lot of people as well about the same thing. So did my mom. And then after those 6 months, I quit my job and started working for him. And it's been an adventure ever since. I think I'm on... be 20 years next year for me.
That's right. That's amazing. Yeah. So you started the business 20 years ago. So that's great. Mm-hmm. But Michael, you recently started with the business, but you're the older of the two.
That's
so,
right.
Oh, about what 20, happened?
Yeah. About 20 days ago.
20 days ago. Ago. Okay.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
So I took, as my dad said, I also started on Wall Street after college. I spent about 15 or 16 years in investment banking, covering of all things media and entertainment companies, helping them raise capital, execute mergers and acquisitions. And I loved it. I loved what I did until I didn't, at which point I sort of saw the light, which was the other side of the table. Instead of being an advisor, actually being a principal and being an owner and being an operator. And I moved over to the operating side of the business. I joined a company and ran mergers and acquisitions and strategy for about 10 years, for the last 10 years or so. And at that business, we started, again, it was in the media and entertainment space. We started very small, and then we executed a whole strategic plan to transform this business. We went through about 40 acquisitions and joint ventures and partnerships, and built what was a sort of one-dimensional radio old school business into a multi-dimensional, multi-platform business. And it was a ton of fun. But again, it was not mine. It was not something I had a small ownership stake as a public shareholder. It was not exactly not exactly the end game, but I have always had this sort of entrepreneurial itch. And I've sort of had night jobs where I've helped people, you know, think through their strategy, think through their plans, think through where to go next. I work with a number of startups and venture capital firms, helping them help their portfolios think through what's next. And then the only time I really interacted on a business level with either my dad or my brother was when they would get a phone call, hey, are you interested in selling the business? And those phone calls kept coming fast and furious. And we would meet over lunch, right off the New Jersey Turnpike. And one day I said, well, wait a minute, what if we flipped the script a little bit? And instead of selling, what if we went and acquired companies? And Dan said, I've never had the headspace to think about that. We're so busy running the business and solving those problems. What would that even look like? And that's always been my skill set, and thinking through a landscape, an ever-changing landscape, which certainly in the Jansen space is today. There are a number of private equity-backed companies in the space that have rolled up, you know, lots and lots of companies. I think the statistics was there were 25,000 Jansen distribution businesses about 10 years ago. Today, yes. There's less than 2,000.
Yes.
So there's been a ton of consolidation already. So that's one side of it. And then the other side of it is this is an industry in transformation. And that's where, you know, I can help see around the corner because I haven't been doing it for 20 years. And so the three of us spent a lot of time before I decided to jump into this, talking about what we can do with the core business. Put acquisitions aside, because that's down the road. That's we can do that. That'll come. But what else can we do with the core business? What haven't you guys had the chance to try that you've been thinking about because you've been heads down? And so, you know, a couple months ago, we just decided now's the right time and let's jump in and do it.
Well, it's very interesting. And you talked about consolidation, and with so much consolidation happening in the industry, especially the Jansen industry, how do you think that affects Spruce? And what is that, you know, which is unique about Spruce, which makes you differentiated in the market?
So I could speak on that, gives us a competitive, at least we think it gives us a competitive advantage. Customers are either looking for certain characteristics of who they're going to buy from. Either they're looking for speed and best price, and they're not looking for the interaction, or we find that there's a customer base that's looking for, you know, a competitive price, product that gets there at a good pace, but they want the expertise, they want the training, they want the knowledge, they want the friendly touch. And I think there's a major distinction than there ever was before. There used to be a middle ground of a lot of larger, call it 50 million to 150 million size businesses, distribution businesses in our industry. They're gone. So there is now a large gap between the growing small to medium sized businesses and the exponential size of the private equity backed businesses. And it's been a huge opportunity for us. One of the things that I tell the sales team, and we talked about it with the customers as well, one of the things that gives us an advantage is customers like to pick up the phone every once in a while and yell at somebody, if that case may be. And for the ability they have to pick up the phone and call me at any point in time, let me know the positive and negative of what's going on, something that I could solve immediately versus having to pick up a phone, dial a robot, figure out where you're going, next person you get on the phone with, and then you don't even know who you're talking to, and it's a big struggle to get something done. That, I think, is our biggest competitive advantage at the moment, and I think a lot of that gives us the same reason that I wanted to come into this business so long ago is the way we could pivot quickly and change on a dime and change what we're doing, add a revenue stream, take away a revenue stream, go into a different target market quicker than probably a larger company could do that has to go through a lot more logistics to get it done.
One of the things that I've always said over the years is that a company like Spruce versus a company like some of the mega companies, mm-hmm. when they want to make a change, they have to make a change like an aircraft carrier. It takes them miles to make the change. If we need to pivot or make a change, as Dan is talking about, we're a PT. I grew up PT 109. We can make a change in a heartbeat. And that's the quality that a lot of people look for, is the fact that we have people answering the phone. They identify themselves and they don't put you on hold. They try to solve a problem or get some answers to you. So those are the things. And I watch with great pride in that the boys understand that concept and are taking it to the next level, which I could have never dreamt possible. If Dan hadn't come into the business nearly 20 years ago, I would have been long gone like everybody else, like all my friends and all my competitors. But because he was there and we worked together so well over the years, and Mike was always around. I mean, there's times that we would sit down over dinner, Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, and talk about things. And we would listen to what Mike had to say, because from a financial perspective, Dan and I were operators running at breakneck speed. We knew we were making money, but we didn't have a model that we could plug in.
I still tell everybody this. It's like we're going down the highway at 100 miles an hour with the doors off. Things are flying out the door. Things are flying out the trunk, but we're still going forward.
Right. And growing.
No, it's very interesting that you say that. And I'm really glad that both Dan and Michael are in the business. But what about families out there where the kids do not want to get into the business? How do they deal with it? Is it like, hey, you know, is it just consolidation is the answer, or what happened?
These families, and I hear about it, people talk about it with me because they're all jealous, and I'm the luckiest guy. I tell everybody, yeah, I'm the luckiest guy on the face of the planet that I have two sons that are seriously interested. If you don't have, you can't make your kids involved in something that doesn't interest them. Listen, they both are college graduates, University of Michigan. There's nothing glamorous about selling toilet paper and paper towels, but it is a way to make a living, and it's a way to make a good living. And if you're willing to work in that with that thought in mind, then the family should be involved in it. But if the kids have this arbitrary idea where they want to go, you just got to let go and get what you can get out of it and get out in one piece for yourself.
You can't force someone to do this. You have to want to do it, because it's not glamorous. You know, there are tedious things that just have to get done. But if you look at each other, who's going to get it? We're going to get it done, yeah. Because it's got to get done or else it doesn't get done. And so if you have a family and you don't have succession plan in place, you're either looking to sell to either another party in the industry. Maybe you set up an ESOP and you sell it to your employees. Mm-hmm. People have done that successfully, and that works fine. If you're in the Jan-San space and you happen to be in the tri-state area, you should call us because we're interested. But you know, you can't do this by mistake. You can't do this by happenstance. You have to be intentional about it.
No, that's great, right? You really can't force anybody to do something. It makes a lot of sense. Another follow-up question on this, right? So there are pros and cons to this, and you guys have dinner conversations about the business. Let's say you have a great day in the business, you know, it's awesome. But let's say you don't have a good day in the business. Does it also reflect at home? How do you deal with that? Because that's a problem, right? Hey, working relationship is different than a personal relationship, and these are your sons,
yes,
right? So how do you deal with that?
Well, it's not easy, but we've had my wife and I and the kids have seen over the years how we handle it. I mean, we had many, many bad days, and we dealt with it, and we discussed it, and we didn't hide anything because they knew there was some risk that was going to be dealt with. But you talk about it. I'm always about getting it out on the table. Don't hide anything. And sometimes it's pretty hard. But we as a family have always felt if we could be honest with each other, not hide anything, be transparent, you can work through those tough days. And then you really get excited when you have those great days. You just try to get more great days than bad days. And that's success.
So transparency is the answer.
My opinion, transparency is the only answer. There's nothing that I will hide from my boys about the business. And I also, now as we go forward, I don't push issues that I have. I mean, I make suggestions and then I shut up and I let them, because as I've said to both of them, the consequences are now yours, not mine. So that's how we're transitioning to go forward.
You know, and the world is changing in a very fast pace right now. And you got to be really, really skilled. I mean, luckily, you have very smart boys and it really helps. But sometimes, right? So let's say family, you know, it's not just about the immediate family, right? You know, it could be an extended family who's also working in the business.
Yes.
Or it could be your own son and daughter.
Yes.
But let's say they don't do that well.
Okay.
Okay. And then, hey, the performance is not up to the mark. But let's say if it's an employee, you would let them go. But then if it's family, then what happens?
Yeah. Well, it gets very difficult. Then we have real time, real situations where we had to deal with it. I will tell you that when I bought the business, my father-in-law was my first hire. He was an excellent, their grandfather was an excellent salesman. Didn't have any experience, but all he cared about was his son-in-law's success. I brought in my mother to make collection calls because nobody worries about their son's money more than their mother. So she used to come in. And then we hired my sister-in-law, my wife's sister. And that didn't work out so well. And it became a conflict within the family and a conflict within the business that affected the everyday.
It wasn't necessarily a performance issue. I was going to say personality difference.
Dynamic.
So, you know, my aunt, Hank's sister-in-law, I was there for a lot of this. It wasn't a performance concern. And I think a lot of the reasons why a lot of times family structures don't do well is personality traits. So you have to have a mesh of a personality in order to make it successful. It's not just, well, I agree. The number one thing is transparency. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Even if you have transparency, if you are having personality trait issues, it's going to struggle to be successful at it. I'm on a board where I sit with a bunch of other family-owned distributors like us. And that exact question you're asking about, what happens if a family member doesn't perform, comes up a lot. And there's various different things that companies have done. They've moved them into roles where they're supporting cast. They've moved them out of the business, but still gave them equity in the business. You have to get creative. It's not as easy as just letting an employee go. There are ramifications. And if not done well, I've seen and I've talked to family members of other companies that don't talk anymore, whether it be 10, 15, 20 years later. So it is a very delicate situation. And when Mike was coming on board, we tried to lay it out as best as we can that our relationship will change. It will never be the same. For better or worse, it will change coming on board. It's not going to stay status quo. But it's on us to pick which direction that's going to go. I happen to think it's a personality match, much more like my father and I, whereas my mom and I was a personality clash. And it was something we had to navigate around. We had to figure out how to do that and how to work with two people with very emotional, volatile personalities and how to work around that, which we did for 15 years, about 15 years.
Yeah.
So it's multifaceted how to make it successful. And it could very easily crumble really quickly too.
As I was really thinking hard about this, joining, and it was, well, we're going to get into fights. We're going to get into arguments. We're going to get in each other's way. And Dan said, yeah, but I know your intentions are always going to be in the right place. Your intentions are always going to be trying to move the business forward. We may disagree on how to get there, but I don't question what you're going to be trying to do. And that is important. And that was actually really important for me to hear. Because I know that we're going to fight and we're going to disagree on different things. Because we do have a very different style, a very different approach, and a different skill set. But I think ultimately, if we can stay true to that and understand that we do have each other's best intention and the business's intention or best interests at heart.
Motives. Shared motives.
Yeah.
Well, we just talked about the three of you, but I would like to know the role of your wife, right? Into the whole business, what role does your wife play?
Well, when we first bought the business, it was quite clear to both of us that I knew a fair amount of how to sell and how to manage salespeople because I did that for a very large company. And I figured there's enough about the logistics and the warehousing and the purchasing. Finance, not happening, okay? I don't think in my lifetime I've written 20 checks. My wife has handled all of our financials, both on a family basis. And then when I decided or wanted to do this, I needed her approval because she worked in a bank. She's an accountant. She worked in a bank and she had to give up her career to work with me and handle all the finances. So it was a decision that we made together that we would split the responsibilities of the company. You know, you're handling the finances, insurance and all that stuff and the money and the checking account, and I'm handling all the other stuff. And I may suggest to you that I'd like you to pay this bill sooner than another bill, because otherwise I'm not going to be able to get the product to fill the orders. But it's your choice. You decide. So that was how we managed to work together and raise two boys. I mean, Connie was there at most of her basketball, football, soccer games and basketball and baseball games. I rarely made a lot of them, but she was always there. But she was always there every day. You know, come in separately, two different cars. The minute she'd come in, I'd leave. And I'd spend the day out selling, leading our sales team, leading selling. And then I'd come back and deal with the other stuff. And then she would get in the car and go home and take care of them. And that's how we did it. And when Dan came in, it was very similar, except they spent a lot of time together. So, and that's how you got to do it. So she retired 6 years ago.
6-7 years ago.
She never let go. Still won't ever let go, because it's in our DNA, as you started this whole conversation. It's in the family DNA. She has never let go. I've let go on a lot of things, but it's still, you know, it's our baby. We took it from near disaster to where we are today. And so every day she asks, speak to the boys, what's going on?
And I'm physically sitting in the office she sat in.
Yes.
So I've yet to, but Mom, I am going to be redecorating. It's coming soon. But I found old ledgers, like handwritten journal entries. It's crazy.
Yes.
But yeah, she's always asking questions and pushing to, you know, help make decisions, which is good. Yeah. And what my mom did is part of the business.
Yeah.
But so no, so she's not involved in it, won't let go. So
sure. I mean, Dan and Mike, you know, are your kids interested in the business?
Well, they're a little young. Mm-hmm. I've got 11 and almost 8-year-old. I think on some level they might know what we do, but not much. They've been to the warehouse. They've been to the office a lot, especially snow days or days off. They'll come with me. But they, you know, I the same way that we were raised, the same way I plan on raising them, is a open option. So they so choose. I'm sure when it comes to high school or, you know, and they need something to do, I'll have plenty of them for them to do at the office, but I won't push it. As to Mike said before, you have to want to do it. It has to come naturally to you.
My grandson, Dan's oldest son, happened to mention to my wife, he said, Grandma, I'm thinking maybe when I grow up, maybe I can work with my dad and my Uncle Mike. Well, when you hear that as, you know, a grandpa and as somebody that worked your whole career at this, there's nothing that I could think of that would be any greater than another generation of Josephs running Spruce and handling it going forward. So
talk about a personality clash. That would be a tough one.
So that's amazing. And it's very inspiring that you tell that. So what parenting advice would you give our audience? You know, you've raised two really smart boys. Yeah. Any parenting advice you would give?
Well, that's a hard one. You do it by the seat of your pants. Cool. My wife and I were very young when we got married, and we were very young when we had kids. We did the things that our parents taught us, that we learned from our parents, how to raise kids. So we tried to instill in them a lot of feeling about schoolwork and doing the right thing and playing sports and getting involved with your life other than idle time. I don't know if I can quantify it. I mean, they hopefully could. Sometimes I hear them say things and do things that I said, oh my God, really, we're listening and paying attention. So, you know, and they both have said, you know, why is it that I can't find that person or that personality that you had and you had in our lives? Why can't I find that person in my life like you did? So I know whatever we did, it seemed to have resonated on both sides, and they do have distinctly different personalities, But, you know, I hope that they get the best of both my wife and I's, you know, attitude about doing things. And I see my grandchildren and I see great things on my granddaughters who are older, 16 and 14. And I see them raising, you know, growing up to be beautiful girls, beautiful women who have their heads on straight. And I couldn't be more proud when I had the opportunity this holiday season. Mike was generous enough to ship them down to Grandma and Grandpa to Florida to our place. And we got them for 5 days uninterrupted joy and watching them interact with our friends and family. I mean, not our family, but friends and their family, and watch my girls just captivate these people. I mean, it's doesn't get any better.
Yeah, awesome. You know, so they've been listening as kids and they've been imparting that knowledge on their kids, you know, it's really great.
Yes. Bringing some good contributions from my wife as well. Yeah. Done a great job with the girls. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So talking about money, right? Wealth. So do you differentiate between the family wealth, personal wealth, and the business wealth, or how does that work?
Well, I could tell you from our history, it's you either take it from the left pocket or the right pocket.
Sure.
But it's the same pair of pants.
Sure.
And a lot of people say, well, what's the big deal? You just take it out of the business. Well, you don't just take it out of the business. So when people say that, I know they clearly don't understand the dynamics of running a family business. So if, like I said, and I tell people all the time, if I take it out of this pocket, that doesn't make a difference, or I take it out of the other pocket. Same money, all goes to the same purpose. And focus. If the company does well, the family does well. If the company is struggling a little bit, the family struggles a little bit. It's all tied together.
I think some things that I've learned and we talk about with a lot of other competitors that I have is you either could have a lifestyle family business or you have a family business that's built for growth. And both of them are okay. And both of them are fantastic. And you could be very successful in both of them. If you are a lifestyle business, your business is predicated around making sure that your family is comfortable and living the way they want to live. And that's something to be desired by a lot of people. If you have a family business that's designed for growth, you're looking to put money back into the business to acquire, to do different things, to make investments in sales team, to make investments in purchasing larger warehouses, to putting money back in the business to grow further on so that there might be larger money down the pot. But both of them, I think, are fantastic business models. You just have to choose which one you want.
And I think it doesn't have to be just one for the life cycle of the business. Because, and we talked, again, back to the conversations of when I just joined, because it's so fresh in my mind.
It was yesterday.
We're talking about, okay, I built this financial model. And I said, okay, if we do these 10 things, this business should do, you know, should triple in a couple of years. What am I missing? And then you said, well, you're not missing any of that. I said, well, why wasn't this done? Well, okay, let me take you back. When we bought this business, my goal was to send you to college. That was the goal of the business, to send you and your brother to college. That was it. So there was no differentiating between personal and business wealth. It was one and the same. Now it's pretty different. Great. Now the business stands on its own and we are here for this next generation to grow. And that is what we're trying to do. So to Dan's point, there are two different types of businesses. I think what you're seeing now is a business that's transformed and crossed that chasm to now become a growth business.
Well, that's a great insight. No, I think it's a great insight, right? So it doesn't have to be the same all the time, you know, right. It just shifts over a period of time. So what do you guys do for fun outside of work?
Well, I play a lot of golf and I play a lot of tennis, and I currently am lucky enough to be able to spend a fair amount of the winter in Florida, which I do. And my wife plays tennis. We play together. We play golf together. So for me, it's great. And I'm still able to keep in touch every day. I still have my computer in my little office at home. And so that's my relaxation. And both of us have gone through some health issues. Dan and I navigated something very major for me, which we were able to deal with properly. And so it's important. I'm about to celebrate a very momentous birthday. And
3 days.
Two days.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yep. And I'm lucky to be around. And, you know, I attribute that to the fact that every day I get up and I'm doing something. I'm not sitting around on the couch. I'm not watching a lot of TV.
I play some tennis too, and I would love to play some tennis with you someday.
I actually got into golf as well for the last 3-4 years. I got really into it. I found a good group of guys that we play a lot of golf together, go on some golf trips. So a lot of my free time is spent around that. And the other time is spent redoing sixth grade and second grade. I am, I can tell my math in sixth grade is much better the second time around. So a lot of the focus on helping the kids get through school.
That's awesome. You know, spend time with your kids. It's awesome, man.
Yeah. I also like to play golf, tennis, go out and cycle, out riding, enjoying the fresh air. And then I'm on the sidelines for my kids' sporting events as often as I possibly can, because I know that does not last and they're not going to be playing in college. So there's a few short years left to really be with them and enjoy them while they're home. And and then we like to travel as a family.
That's awesome. Travel as a family is fun. Yes. Now, we would usually like to end the Driven podcast with this question, which is, what book are you reading right now? So,
well, I'm currently reading a book. It's called With the Old Breed by E.J. Sledge. It's about being a Marine in World War II during the 1944-45 campaigns of Peleliu and Saipan. And it was my father-in-law, who was a Marine till the day he passed away. He was a Marine and he was there in both places. And he never talked about it, but I did a lot of reading about it. My dad was in North Africa behind a desk working with the Army Air Corps. But my father-in-law, when I got him to talk about it, I started reading volumes, and I read a tremendous amount of books on it. And I'm always reading, which is what I'm reading now. I read it on the plane up, and I will read more chapters on the way down.
As I said, I'm repeating sixth grade, so I just finished Beowulf, and I am now reading Mousetrap by Agatha Christie. It's a play that she wrote. So that is my entertainment, is reading books to help my son get through.
I just finished The Coddling of the American Mind, which I don't like to get political and talk about things that are in transition. And I think as you get older, you may move. Many people in this country go from, you know, liberal to a little bit more conservative. And this is a book that sort of is in that transition and what has happened to the American school system and kids in America. And it's, I think it was a fascinating read. So
very delicate.
Yeah, I'm reading this book called So Good That They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport, also the author of Deep Work, where you keep getting better at what you do and eventually you discover your passion. So it's not about passion, it's about hard work. So I thought that was a great book. But
that's an interesting thing about passion. That's not a word that we brought up today. But my feeling about success of business in general, but specifically family business, if you don't have the passion for it, you're not going to end up in the right place. And I have always had the passion. And I think I've passed it on to both boys that passion is something you do. I mean, I'm passionate about a lot of stuff. I'm also without many filters anymore, but I'm still passionate about a lot of stuff, especially our business. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Absolutely. And you work hard and you get better at it. You know, that's awesome. So Hank, Mike, and Dan, I really enjoyed this conversation. It was great to learn about Spruce Industries and the family business, how you run it. How do you pass it from one generation to another? The do's and the don'ts, the conflicts and all that. You know, it was a fascinating conversation. I just want to say a big, big thank you for your time.
Thank you.
You know,
thank
it's you. Great having sure. you on the great. Show. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Driven Podcast. Check out our other episodes for more and subscribe to be the first to access every new episode.